Chapter 150. In which the tables are turned, completely upside down, old Martin's cherished projects, so long hidden in his own breast, so frequently in danger of abrupt disclosure through the bursting forth of the indignation he had hoarded up during his residence with Mr. Pecksniff, were retarded, but not beyond a few hours, by the occurrences just now related. Stunned, as he had been at first by the intelligence conveyed to him through Tom Pinch and John Westlock, of the supposed manner of his brother's death, overwhelmed as he was by the subsequent narratives of Chuffey and Nadgett, and the forging of that chain of circumstances ending in the death of Jonas, of which catastrophe he was immediately informed. Scattered as his purposes and hopes were for the moment, by the crowding in of all these incidents between him and his end, still their very intensity and the tumult of their assemblage nerved him to the rapid and unyielding execution of his scheme. In every single circumstance, whether it were cruel, cowardly, or false, he saw the flowering of the same pregnant seed. Self, grasping, eager, narrow-ranging, overreaching self, with its long train of suspicions, lusts, deceits, and all their growing consequences, was the root of the vile tree. Mr. Pecksniff had so presented his character before the old man's eyes, that he, the good, the tolerant, enduring Pecksniff, had become the incarnation of all selfishness and treachery, and the more odious the shapes in which those vices ranged themselves before him now, the sterner consolation he had in his design of setting Mr. Pecksniff right and Mr. Pecksniff's victims too. To this work he brought not only the energy and determination natural to his character, which, as the reader may have observed in the beginning of his or her acquaintance with this gentleman, was remarkable for the strong development of those qualities, but all the forced and unnaturally nurtured energy consequent upon their long suppression. And these two types of resolution setting into one and sweeping on, became so strong and vigorous, that, to prevent themselves from being carried away before it, heaven knows where, was as much as John Westlock and Mark Tapley together, though they were tolerably energetic too, could manage to effect. He had sent for John Westlock immediately on his arrival, and John, under the conduct of Tom Pinch, had waited on him. Having a lively recollection of Mr. Tapley, he had caused that gentleman's attendance to be secured, through John's means, without delay, and thus, as we have seen, they had all repaired together to the city. But his grandson he had refused to see until tomorrow, when Mr. Tapley was instructed to summon him to the temple at 10 o'clock in the forenoon. Tom he would not allow to be employed in anything, lest he should be wrongfully suspected. But he was a party to all their proceedings, and was with them until late at night until after they knew of the death of Jonas, when he went home, to tell all these wonders to little Ruth, and to prepare her for accompanying him to the temple in the morning, agreeably to Mr. Chuzzlewit's particular injunction. It was characteristic of old Martin, and his looking onto something which he had distinctly before him, that he communicated to them nothing of his intentions, beyond such hints of reprisal on Mr. Pecksniff as they gathered from the game he had played in that gentleman's house, and the brightening of his eyes, whenever his name was mentioned. Even to John Westlock, in whom he was evidently disposed to place great confidence, which may indeed be said of every one of them, he gave no explanation whatever. He merely requested them to return in the morning, and with this for their utmost satisfaction, they left him, when the night was far advanced, alone. The events of such a day might have worn out the body and spirit of a much younger man than he, but he sat in deep and painful meditation until the morning was bright. Nor did he even then seek any prolonged repose, but merely slumbered in his chair, until 7 o'clock, when Mr. Tapley had appointed to come to him by his desire, and came as fresh, and clean and cheerful as the morning itself. "You are punctual," said Mr. Chuzzlewit, opening the door to him in reply to his light knock, which had roused him instantly. My wishes, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Tapley, whose mind would appear from the context to have been running on the matrimonial service, is to love, honor, and obey. The clock's a striking now, sir. Apostrophe, come in. Apostrophe, thankee, sir, apostrophe rejoined Mr. Tapley, what could I do for you first, sir? Apostrophe, you gave my message to Martin? Apostrophe, said the old man, bending his eyes upon him. I did, sir, apostrophe returned Mark, and you never see a gentleman more surprised in all your born days than he was. Apostrophe, what more did you tell him? Apostrophe, Mr. Chuzzlewit inquired. Why, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Tapley, smiling, I should have liked to tell him a deal more, but not being able, sir, I didn't tell him. Apostrophe, you told him all you knew? Apostrophe, but it was precious little, sir, apostrophe retorted Mr. Tapley. There was very little respect in you, that I was able to tell him, sir. I only mentioned my opinion, that Mr. Pecksniff would find himself deceived, sir, and that you would find yourself deceived, and that he would find himself deceived, sir. Apostrophe, and what? Apostrophe, asked Mr. Chuzzlewit. Meaning him, sir? Apostrophe, meaning both him and me. Apostrophe, well, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Tapley, in your old opinions of each other. As to him, sir, and his opinions, I know he's a altered man. I know it. I know it long afore he spoke to you t'other day, and I must say it. Nobody don't know half as much of him as I do. Nobody can't. There was always a deal of good in him, but a little of it got crusted over, somehow. I can't say who rolled the paste of that ear crust myself, but apostrophe, go on, apostrophe said Martin. Why do you stop? Apostrophe, but it will. I beg your pardon, but I think it may have been you, sir. Unintentional, I think it may have been you. I don't believe that neither of you gave the other quite a fair chance. There. Now I've got rid on it, apostrophe said Mr. Tapley in a fit of desperation. I can't go a carrying it about in my own mind, busting myself with it. Yesterday was quite long enough. It's out now. I can't help it. I'm sorry for it. Don't whisk it on him, sir, that's all. Apostrophe, it was clear that Mark expected to be ordered out immediately, and was quite prepared to go. So you think, apostrophe said Martin, that his old faults are, in some degree, of my creation, do you? Apostrophe, well, sir, apostrophe retorted Mr. Tapley, I'm very sorry, but I can't unsay it. It's hardly fair of you, sir, to make a ignorant man convict himself in this way, but I do think so. I am as respectful disposed to you, sir, as a man can be, but I do think so. Apostrophe, the light of a faint smile seemed to break through the dull steadiness of Martin's face, as he looked attentively at him, without replying. Yet you are an ignorant man, you say, apostrophe he observed after a long pause. Very much so, apostrophe Mr. Tapley replied. And I a learned, well-instructed man, you think? Apostrophe, likewise very much so, apostrophe Mr. Tapley answered. The old man, with his chin resting on his hand, paced the room twice or thrice before he added. You have left him this morning? Apostrophe, come straight from him now, sir. Apostrophe, for what does he suppose? Apostrophe, he don't know what to suppose, sir, no more than myself. I told him just what passed yesterday, sir, and that you had said to me, can you be here by 7 in the morning? And that you had said to him, through me, can you be here by 10 in the morning? And that I had said yes to both. That's all, sir. Apostrophe, his frankness was so genuine, that it plainly was all. Perhaps, apostrophe said Martin, he may think you are going to desert him, and to serve me? Apostrophe, I have served him in that sort of way, sir, apostrophe replied Mark, without the loss of any atom of his self-possession, and we have been that sort of companions in misfortune, but my opinion is, he don't believe a word on it. No more than you do, sir. Apostrophe, will you help me to dress, and get me some breakfast from the hotel? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Martin. With pleasure, sir, apostrophe, said Mark. And by, apostrophe, said Martin, remaining in the room, as I wish you to do, will you attend to the door yonder, give admission to visitors, I mean, when they knock? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Tapley. You will not find it necessary to express surprise at their appearance, apostrophe, Martin suggested. Oh dear no, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Tapley, not at all. Apostrophe, although he pledged himself to this with perfect confidence, he was in a state of unbounded astonishment even now. Martin appeared to observe it, and to have some sense of the ludicrous bearing of Mr. Tapley under these perplexing circumstances. For, in spite of the composure of his voice, and the gravity of his face, the same indistinct light flickered on the latter several times. Mark bestirred himself, however, to execute the offices with which he was entrusted, and soon lost all tendency to any outward expression of his surprise, in the occupation of being brisk and busy. But when he had put Mr. Chuzzlewit's clothes in good order for dressing, and when that gentleman was dressed and sitting at his breakfast, Mr. Tapley's feelings of wonder began to return upon him with great violence, and, standing beside the old man with a napkin under his arm, it was as natural and easy to joke to Mark, to be a butler in the temple, as it had been to volunteer as cook on board the Screw. He found it difficult to resist the temptation of casting sidelong glances at him very often. Nay, he found it impossible, and accordingly yielded to this impulse so often, that Martin caught him in the fact some 50 times. The extraordinary things Mr. Tapley did with his own face, when any of these detections occurred, the sudden occasions he had to rub his eyes, or his nose or his chin, the look of wisdom with which he immediately plunged into the deepest thought, or became intensely interested in the habits and customs of the flies upon the ceiling, or the sparrows out of doors, or the overwhelming politeness with which he endeavored to hide his confusion by handing the muffin, may not unreasonably be assumed to have exercised the utmost power of feature that even Martin Chuzzlewit the elder possessed. But he sat perfectly quiet, and took his breakfast at his leisure, or made a show of doing so, for he scarcely ate or drank, and frequently lapsed into long intervals of musing. When he had finished, Mark sat down to his breakfast at the same table, and Mr. Chuzzlewit, quite silent still, walked up and down the room. Mark cleared away in due course, and set a chair out for him, in which, as the time drew on towards 10 o'clock, he took his seat, leaning his hands upon his stick, and clenching them upon the handle, and resting his chin on them again. All his impatience and abstraction of manner had vanished now, and as he sat there, looking, with his keen eyes, steadily towards the door, Mark could not help thinking what a firm, square, powerful face it was, or exulting in the thought that Mr. Pecksniff, after playing a pretty long game of bowls with its owner, seemed to be at last in a very fair way of coming in for a rubber or two. Mark's uncertainty in respect of what was going to be done or said, and by whom to whom, would have excited him in itself. But knowing for a certainty besides, that young Martin was coming, and in a very few minutes must arrive, he found it by no means easy to remain quiet and silent. But, excepting that he occasionally coughed in a hollow and unnatural manner to relieve himself, he behaved with great decorum through the longest 10 minutes he had ever known. A knock at the door. Mr. Westlock. Mr. Tapley, in admitting him, raised his eyebrows to the highest possible pitch, implying thereby that he considered himself in an unsatisfactory position. Mr. Chuzzlewit received him very courteously. Mark waited at the door for Tom Pinch and his sister, who were coming up the stairs. The old man went to meet them, took their hands in his, and kissed her on the cheek. As this looked promising, Mr. Tapley smiled benignantly. Mr. Chuzzlewit had resumed his chair before young Martin, who was close behind them, entered. The old man, scarcely looking at him, pointed to a distant seat. This was less encouraging, and Mr. Tapley's spirits fell again. He was quickly summoned to the door by another knock. He did not start, or cry, or tumble down, at sight of Miss Graham and Mrs. Lupin, but he drew a very long breath, and came back perfectly resigned, looking on them, and on the rest with an expression which seemed to say, that nothing could surprise him any more, and that he was rather glad to have done with that sensation forever. The old man received Mary no less tenderly than he had received Tom Pinch's sister. A look of friendly recognition passed between himself and Mrs. Lupin, which implied the existence of a perfect understanding between them. It engendered no astonishment in Mr. Tapley, for, as he afterwards observed, he had retired from the business, and sold off the stock. Not the least curious feature in this assemblage was, that everybody present was so much surprised, and embarrassed by the sight of everybody else, that nobody ventured to speak. Mr. Chuzzlewit alone broke silence. "Set the door open, Mark. ..." he said, "and come here." Mark obeyed. The last appointed footstep sounded now upon the stairs. They all knew it. It was Mr. Pecksniff's, and Mr. Pecksniff was in a hurry too, for he came bounding up with such uncommon expedition, that he stumbled twice or thrice. "Where is my venerable friend?" ..." he cried upon the upper landing, and then with open arms came darting in. Old Martin merely looked at him, but Mr. Pecksniff started back, as if he had received the charge from an electric battery. "My venerable friend is well?" cried Mr. Pecksniff. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.